Item 428, accept findings from Portland United Against Hate on hate crime and incident reporting procedures pilot project.
Commissioner Udaly, can you kick us off, please?
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Portland United Against Hate is a coalition of community-based organizations, neighborhood associations, and concerned Portlanders who came together in November of 2016 to build a response to the increased fear felt in many marginalized communities. I'd like to reiterate what I said to many of you in the reception preceding today's council session. Community-based organizations are key players in our efforts, and Portland United Against Hate has the potential to become a model for how government and community can work together to create more welcoming, inclusive, and safer communities for all. Today's report will detail the results of the $40,000 pilot project, which was funded last year, and has informed the coalition's current work with the $350,000 they were awarded last year. I would like to introduce our first set of presenters who will get us started. Carrie Coe, Program Coordinator for Portland United Against Hate in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. Alice Perry from Latino Network. And Eric Ward from the Western States Center. And while we wait, I'd just like to welcome Eric back to Portland and congratulate him on his new position. Welcome, everyone. Please state your name for the record.
Thanks. Let's see if I can get this PowerPoint. Great. So my name is Carrie Coe. I am the program coordinator with Portland United Against Hate. I'm going to put this in to full screen. If I know how to do that.
It's a slideshow.
Oh, thank you. You all know what you're doing from the beginning. Great, thank you. So Portland United Against Hate, as you said, is a partnership between the City of Portland and the community, and you've all been very supportive of this work so far, so thank you for that. PUA was given, as the Commissioner said, a $40,000 grant last year to run a pilot project, and we are here today to report back on the outcomes of that grant. You authorized the pilot grant to begin the process of collecting data, to begin the process of addressing how to collect data on hate incidents happening throughout the city. The community took that money and spun it into a project that laid the foundation for a modern, responsive, and people-centered system of collecting information that we are calling the Hate Incident Tracking Tool. And beyond that, we are creating a holistic system that supports those being targeted and builds resiliency community-wide to respond when hateful acts interrupt our lives. So what you'll hear today is what we did with that original pilot grant, how it laid the foundation for our work, and a testimony of a few people who were impacted by that pilot. You will not be getting the full report on our current grant funding, the $350,000 grants. That will come this winter, so today we're just focusing on the pilot. And today our presentation is in three parts. First is this panel, and we'll be offering some context. I'll share a bit about the city's role and how this work is meeting ONI's goals, and then Alice Perry, who is the Community Programs Director at the Latino Network, co-founder of PUA and a current co-chair, will talk about the community context of how the pilot was created. And finally, Eric Ward will speak to the national context and value that this model that we saw exemplified through the pilot, the value of that. Eric, as you probably know, is a national civil rights strategist working to counter the manifestations of organized hate. But he got his start right here in Oregon, I just learned, as an organizer with the Community Alliance of Lane County, and now serves as the executive director of the Western State Center. So that's us. The second panel will be people focused on the pilot project findings and how it laid the foundation for our current work. And then the final panel is testimony from community leaders and city staff who will update you about the impacts of the project. So let me just jump right into this, how we are thinking about the city's role in this partnership. So PUA is community-led, but this is a partnership with the city, and the city has an important role to play. Hate violence, as we know, is not compatible with a safe, livable, and inclusive city. Hate exists in Portland under a thin veneer, and it pops up abruptly and violently to remind us that in some ways Portland's shiny reputation speaks not to the real safety of marginalized communities, but to the power of silence and segregation. This is what PUA is addressing head on. We are creating opportunities to end that silence, both for those affected and for those witnessing what's happening. And we think that this is the city's role too. Hate, in a lot of ways, is actually no different from other disastrous incidents that happen. We might not be able to stop the feelings of hate between people, just like we can't stop an earthquake, but we can mitigate the impact, we can support those affected, and we can be prepared. We can prioritize resources that support communities in building resilience, both with and without the city. I'll offer a quick teaser of the primary findings and the outcomes from the pilot grant. There's a thing that's starting. Some sort of final important update is alerted. How about we postpone?
There you go.
Great, thanks. Thank you for helping me with this. So a few outcomes that I'll offer. This will mainly be the focus of the second panel, but we found and know that hate goes beyond crime, that people underreport hate acts, and that hate is poorly tracked. The outcome of this finding from the pilot project is the hate incident tracking tool. It's a direct manifestation of the pilot grant, and this tool will be a valuable resource for the city through the data that we'll collect, but also a resource to direct people towards when hate incidents happen. And you'll hear from Shweta Morthy, the lead on the pilot project, about that. The second finding is that people resource themselves when crisis happens because there's a mammoth gap in services. This led to our second outcome of building a trauma-informed support system that surrounds the tracking system. And Justin Henderson from Lewis and Clark College will talk more about that outcome and strategy. And third, we found that communities need capacity to be able to respond and prepare. The communities are under-resourced to take on this additional and specialized work. We're pairing our data and support systems with a proactive community engagement strategy. PUA is doing trainings, intervention, prevention work, which you'll hear more about from Suleiman Noor of the African Youth and Community Organization. Finally, these findings together tell us that an appropriate approach to hate tracking can encourage people to respond, can support and help heal the trauma, and can allow for us to be better prepared. The pilot was instrumental in detailing those findings to create the outcomes that we're operating from today. So the data tracking and support strategies that were developed as a result of the pilot are scheduled to be beta tested starting later this month, while the community engagement work is already well underway. The pilot, of course, led to our current funding, and what we've seen so far is that PUA is a model for ONI. We're enhancing and supporting and contributing to the Bureau's goals, and here's how we're doing that. The first goal of ONI is structures for inclusion, and PUA was created by community advocating for structural change for a community-centered approach to hate response. And this is a critical evolution in our approach to addressing hate. Data collecting and analysis is informed decision-making, and the data may be used by ONI, the community, others to identify hotspots and provide the information we need for policymaking. The second goal is adaptive governments, and PUA has created and is holding shared space for solving challenges. We're rooted in coming together across the city, neighborhoods, dominant cultural organizations, and culturally specific groups to identify needs and solutions. And through our coalition and grant cohort model, PUA can reach further into the community and practice developing new and relevant infrastructure for solutions and community engagement. And last, the goal of fulfilling and empowering Portlanders. Through our capacity building work, PUA is supporting people, leveraging funds, and setting up systems that are connected to local government, but also separate and situated within the community. who is a concrete example of how these broad and very visionary goals can look like in practice. And the small amount of pilot money, which was granted at $40,000, but which we actually spent $35,000 of, was yielded all the outcomes that you're going to hear about through the presentation today. So with that, I will hand it over to Alice.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, commissioners. My name is Alice Perry. I'm the Director of Community-Based Programs for Latino Network and a co-chair of PUA, the PUA Coalition. So it's my pleasure today to talk to you a little bit about the history of PUA, how it started. As you know, in November of 2016, immediately after the election, our community, as many communities, were stunned and immediately started to see the impacts of that election. Like so many other community-serving agencies, we moved quickly to respond to the community's fear about what this meant for them. The hate rhetoric leading up to the election gave us a glimpse of what we would be facing. But in those few weeks, we were on the ground responding by holding community forums across the Portland metro area. And we kept hearing about how children were being bullied in school, how workers were being harassed in their jobs, how people had racial slurs flung to them when they were buying their groceries or when they were driving down the street or getting gas. Our staff themselves were impacted by this vitriol, and we were responding to our community while holding our own grief, not only doing the day-to-day routine of providing the range of our services, but responding to these growing crises in our community. Representatives from both the Portland Police Bureau and the Gresham Police Bureau and the Sheriff's Department joined us in our forums to allay our community's fears, but they also reported that they weren't receiving increased reports about hate crimes or bias. As part of the ONI's Diversity and Civic Leadership Program, we were also hearing from the other partners that they were facing similar challenges, but challenges that were different and unique to ours at Latino Network. Hate shape-shifted across communities. So the DCL partners approached ONI to partner in responding to hate in our communities. We came to the city and ONI because of the history of our partnership with the city and their recognition of the importance of our communities. And we want to thank Commissioner Fritz for recognizing the importance of this work early on, her leadership in combating hate, and her support of the coalition. And we also want to thank Commissioner Hugh Daly for continuing that support. We also came to the city, as Carrie said, frankly, because it is the city's responsibility to ensure community safety. As community partners, we also recognize and accepted our shared co-responsibility, and we met often and regularly as the ONI Community Hate Response Coalition every week, sometimes several times a week. And the first part of each meeting, quite honestly, was simply to share about the multiple horrific incidents we were hearing about that were occurring in our city, and then moving on to what we need to do to be able to track them, and more importantly, to be able to respond to them. We asked the city, honestly, to partner with us by providing the additional resources we needed to respond effectively to our communities. Many of our community members, despite best efforts, did not feel safe to report hate crimes, incidents, speech and bullying to the police or to the schools or to their employers. Other community members and groups felt that this hate wasn't new. They voiced that this is what they had been grappling with for a long time. As this work grew, other community groups and individuals joined the growing effort, and we carefully shaped our coalition statement, named our coalition Portland United Against Hate, and chose a logo. The statement is grounded not only in response to the current expressions of hate in our community and what they're experiencing, whether they be incidents perpetrated by individuals or, frankly, state-sponsored hate, but also in the historic injustices and hatred that our community has long grappled with. The logo beautifully represents the city we envision, a city of love instead of hate. I would like to ask the PUA Coalition members to stand if they are able or acknowledge that they are somehow a member of the coalition. I would also ask any community member who has ever been impacted by hate to also stand if they are able or to indicate in some way that they have so been impacted. As we look around, we see that this is an issue that impacts us all. From the beginning, we have expressed three goals. Document what is happening, meaningfully and appropriately respond to community members experiencing hate, and collectively work with the city to make Portland a safe and welcoming place for all. You'll be hearing next about the details about how we, the City and PUA members, in partnership, engage community members in focus groups, community members that often aren't asked about their opinions, in a dialogue about what a respectful and meaningful data collection and response system would look like, and how we, as city and community members, together can take the next steps to ensure that the work towards making Portland safe and that the work we do will make Portland safe and welcoming for all. Hate in our community didn't begin in 2016, and however much the fan was flamed, and despite how painful it has been, we can take this opportunity. To finish this work together and build a tool and response system that will enable community members.
Thank you.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. My words are blurring. That will enable community members to safely report hate, to access support, and also, if they desire, join us in working in partnership with others to build a more welcoming and hate-free port.
Thank you. Thank you for the strong message. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, my friend. Dear Honorable Mayor Wheeler and members of the Portland City Commission, 1 year ago this month, a white nationalist activist verbally attacked two young African-American women on the MAX. When three courageous white men sought to de-escalate the situation, the white nationalist stabbed them, killing two. This horrific event focused national attention on the crisis of hate violence in Oregon. Across the country, many were surprised at the level of violent racism, particularly in a city with a progressive reputation. But those committed to an inclusive Oregon know that racial exclusion and other forms of bigoted intimidation have deep roots in Oregon. And this was mostly merely a recent wave of white nationalist assaults on civic participation and civil rights. For nearly 30 years, I've worked with communities, government, and civil society to reduce the impact of hate violence. I began that work in Oregon in 1991 and continue that work, most recently as the U.S. Civil Rights Program Officer at the Ford Foundation, and now as the Executive Director of Western State Center. Last summer, when my home was facing a rising tide of white nationalism, I decided to return to Oregon to help. I've never forgotten that it was in Portland that government, business, and community leaders successfully out-organized white nationalists in the 1990s, and I believe Portland will do so again. We have a lot of work to do. Today, Oregon leads the nation in reported hate and bias crime. ProPublica documented the highest reported rate per capita of incidences occur in Oregon. These include swastikas, attacks on Jewish households, and intimidation of immigrants. The FBI data reported that 104 hate crimes occurred in Oregon in 2016. When hate violence occurs, whether it's Nazi symbols on the courthouse has happened in Eugene, Oregon, or anti-Muslim graffiti, or the murders last spring. It affects so many more people beyond the direct targets of victims. It impacts our entire community. A UK study from the University of Sussex found that knowing a victim of hate crime or even hearing about a hate crime can have significant negative impact. They found that many people respond with anger, anxiety, or feelings of vulnerability. This makes intuitive sense to most of us based on our personal experience. But what is most striking is that in this study, of the 3,000 Muslim and LGBT people interviewed, 4 out of 5 participants knew someone who had been a victim in the past 3 years. Hate crimes and intimidation are a direct assault on community inclusion. It directly undermines a city's reputation and faith in its democratic institutions. Over the past 2 years, white nationalists have surged into the political mainstream. It has gained energy, openly recruiting in our neighborhoods. But let's be clear, white nationalists don't seek to merely spread hate. They seek to organize that hate to undermine democratic institutions. When we should be clear that when we have a growing social movement invested in ethnic cleansing, hate violence is the logical outcome. Hate violence is white nationalist ideology in practice. We know we have a problem with hate violence in Oregon, and odds are that it's bigger than we've imagined. The hate crime figures I cited previously are deeply unreliable. Even the Department of Justice acknowledges that most hate crimes are never reported. That's one reason why Portland United Against Hate is such an important initiative. It's important that we continue to explore best practices to reducing the impact of hate violence in our community. We can't address a problem as wide-reaching and significant as hate violence without real, data-driven understanding of it. Portland United Against Hate not only tells us what's happening in our city, but provides a building block for creating solutions. Our communities can't solve the enormous problem of hate violence alone, and neither can our government. It is our city government's job to build safe, livable communities, and it is the community's job to care for each other. Portland United Against Hate is a model of how our community, government, and business can work together to meet these goals, paving the way to make Portland a safer, more inclusive, and more hopeful place to live. I appreciate each of you, and thank you for your strong leadership on this issue.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you, all three of you.
All right. We have our next panel, Dr. Shwetha Morthy, Dr. Justin Henderson, Suleiman Noor, and Seemab Husseini. We're going to need one extra chair if someone can help with that. Welcome, everyone.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. My name is Shwetha Murthy. I'm the research director at the Coalition of Communities of Color. I come to this work with a PhD in political science and over a decade in academic research. I want to talk to you today about the pilot project that we conducted last fall. The first goal of this private project, of this pilot project, was to really gather community insights and experiences around hate crimes and reporting procedures, and then to really use that to lay the foundation to advise in the creation of a community-driven hate documentation process, and to inform best practices about what kind of resources and guidance is needed around the hate crime and incident reporting process. Before I get into the details of this pilot project study, I want to talk to you about the principles that inform this pilot project, and these are the principles of research justice that basically center and emphasize communities as experts of our experiences, that we possess experiential and historical and cultural knowledge that needs to be taken seriously, that needs to be given the legitimacy of evidence in policy making, and that communities have the right to research, i.e. communities have the right to self-determine what knowledge is produced about them. They have the right to be heard, meaning that we have a right for our experiences to be not dismissed as anecdotal and to be taken seriously. And we have the right to know. We have the right to know research and data and policy that exists about us and that impacts our lives. Sorry, it's been a while since I spoke to a microphone. So what that meant for the pilot project was that even before we started gathering communities together to talk about hate crimes and hate violence, we wanted to give space to communities to really define what it means to experience hate, to be able to share and discuss what kind of experiences with hate communities have had. So from a research point of view, we devised a community-based participatory method where we really focused on focus groups as the best way to really engage communities in that conversation, where we could give space to communities to really engage with and share what experiences with hate they've had, how they define hate, which may be different from how law defines hate crimes. And therefore, based on that, be able to share their best advice on what a hate incident documentation process would look like. So this wasn't a comprehensive needs assessment of hate violence in communities, but rather an opportunity for communities to really fundamentally shift our understanding of hate violence and to be able to propose solutions for how that hate incident, that hate violence should be documented and shared. From a research point of view, we also know that communities can experience focus group fatigue. And so we didn't want to continuously and persistently engage communities in focus groups. So we decided on 7 focus groups with different partners that are listed on this slide here. We did it over fall 2017. And we were able to engage with a wide variety of community members who are at the front lines of experiencing hate violence. The focus group participants and community members were of different ages. They were of different race, ethnicity, and nationalities. They identified in different ways in terms of their gender, and they came from different types of housing status. And I'm happy to go into more details if you have any questions later. So this is the first time, really, that communities most impacted by hate violence have been given the opportunity to present a systematic report about their experiences as well as their solutions. These findings can no longer be dismissed as one-off, as anecdotal, as emotional. It creates the foundation for future work. It creates accountability. So the 4 major findings from this pilot project were that hate goes beyond crime. Feels rather basic, but it needs to be said. for our communities, hate is a feeling, emotion, a behavior. It is interpersonal. It is systemic. It is hate speech. It's symbols. It's racial profiling. It's ICE raids. It's unequal access to opportunities and resources. Hate is internalized and can also come up within groups and within communities. The second major finding of this pilot project was, as Carrie mentioned earlier, that communities have had to make do with their own support networks. Those support networks are stretched to capacity and are not well resourced. And many were even unaware when resources were available of those resources or were unable to access them due to various barriers. The third major finding that came up from this pilot study was that communities are tired of reacting all the time. They feel that there can be proactive response, that hate can be prevented rather than merely being responded to. And that can happen through education, through learning, through bystander intervention, and so on. And lastly, and this is where I'll spend a little bit of time, is the finding that we need more appropriate approaches to encourage hate incident reporting, that hate crime tracking as it currently exists is not working for most communities. As Eric mentioned in his testimonial, there's already national level data that suggests that hate crimes are underreported. I'll add my own data to that. The National Crime Victimization Survey that collected information and data about victims of crimes between 2011 and 2015 said that 54% of hate crimes go unreported. This, when racial bias is the primary motivator of crime. So why does hate crime go unreported? Our pilot study found four barriers. One is just lack of attention. The pilot study found a breadth of hate violence and hate incidents. And it's happening everywhere, it's happening all the time, and attention just isn't paid to that breadth and depth of experience. The second is that a lot of times authorities that would collect hate crimes turn out to be perpetrators. Law enforcement, teachers, employers have all these experiences came up in the focus groups. It can create a feeling of insecurity and discomfort in reporting hate crimes. And it can also be unclear to community members where they can report hate crimes or their hate incidents to if the people that they're supposed to report them to are the ones who are perpetrating it. The third finding that came up as a barrier was lack of action, that when folks have reported incidents and violence of different forms that either nothing has happened or there's been no support. What that means is that even the reporting process has further created harmful effects. It has re-traumatized community members who took the courage to report it to begin with. What that means is that community members in our focus groups identified three big elements that need to be included in the reporting process. One, that the reporting process should be person-centered, and it should be part of a healing process. Data for data's sake does not work. That message was very resoundingly clear from our pilot study. The reporting process should not be re-traumatizing and should not cause more harm. And it should walk alongside with action. That, again, data for data's sake does not work. And if somebody is coming in and reporting a deeply traumatic experience that happened to them, there needs to be action, there needs to be resources that follow along with it. So therein ends our report back of the pilot study. I would like to share a little bit about how this pilot study is forming the foundation of the work that we are currently doing. The CCC, the Coalition of Communities of Color, was commissioned to build a proof of concept that would be informed by the pilot project findings, and that's what we are currently engaged in. We are building on the pilot by creating a community-centered, community-driven, trauma-informed hate incident tracking tool, which is the beta platform that Carrie mentioned at the beginning. We are going to create opportunities for reporting through trusted interface community organizations, our fellow PUA partners. We have a resource guide element in our platform, which connects people who report their experiences to resources that already exist. And in doing all three, we are really taking a holistic approach, again, to hate incident documentation system, that data goes along with capacity building, training, prevention, and resource provision. The manner in which we plan to collect data through this proof of concept is through an online interface, through walk-ins with over 10 community-facing organizations who will be trained in trauma-informed data collection practices. And to the extent that our community organizations have the capacity, we'll also provide this platform in different languages and through different culturally specific data practices. Lastly, we're thinking ahead in terms of what data, what kind of experiences are going to come in, and we're in the process of creating agreements with our partners about who will own this data and how this data will be shared. Where we are at this moment is that community organizations will hold personalized data that they intake from different community members, and that PUA coalition on the whole will have access to aggregate data that is de-identified for the sake of advocacy, organizing, and targeted intervention.
Good afternoon. I'm Dr. Justin Henderson, and I'm the director of the Lewis and Clark Community Counseling Center. I'm also an assistant professor in the Graduate School of Counseling and Education. What I want to talk about today is a little bit about how to integrate trauma-informed care into this hate incident response system that we're attempting to develop. And part of this for me was to think that the work really bore out of the need for there to be a more consolidated process in which members of our community can aid those who have been targets of hate and bias. And for me, I really believe that the model that we're creating recognizes the need for training as well as data gathering capabilities amongst multiple domains. So I'm going to focus on two specific areas. One is going to be on what I'm calling trauma-informed hate incident tracking, and the other is going to be on trauma-informed hate response. And as an academic, obviously, I like long-winded titles. I think part of this is to understand that from a trauma-informed hate incident tracking framework, we have to be able to gather information while simultaneously being sensitive to individuals, families, and communities who have been targeted. And the pilot project data, or the outcomes of this from respondents, show this. And so there really needs to be a balancing between data gathering and relationship building. It's vital that people feel heard, while also empowering them with knowledge necessary to make informed decisions about their situation. I also see that it's really important for us to apply a wide net within our community. This model suggests that there has to be multiple avenues, i.e., community organizations, agencies, etc., by which people may access resources and search for help. There needs to also be the identification of supports, like the points of contact, identifying places and people that will be able to seek out help and support. And you have to train those particular people who will be receiving people who are seeking help in the ways of trauma-informed care, so that the accuracy of the data that you're gathering and the reporting is viable. One of the things that we know from research is that self-report data accuracy and viability is increased when it's conducted from a trauma-informed approach. that takes into consideration cultural competency, emotional and relational resources, sources of post-traumatic resiliency, and ongoing relational support from data gatherers. The other piece to this that I've been focusing on as well is training up-and-coming mental health professionals and making sure that they are trained to screen, assess, and support those who have been targets of hate in the community. Part of this is because we have to recognize that the psychological consequences and the relational consequences of hate, as has already been discussed, can look many different ways, and the needs of those individuals and families and communities may be variable. And so I think that there's a broad applicability, in my opinion, of professionals other than mental health professionals that need to know how to apply and respond in a trauma-informed way to targets of hate. I think that there's also a systemic influence where properly trained mental health professionals may also serve as consultants to the community. So in closing, I think that's really important for us, at least, to be involved in the Portland United Against Hate organization. And I think for us, being able to have the opportunity to actually enact our social justice mission within community organizers who, quite frankly, I've been impressed with since the beginning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Suleiman Noor. I'm a community engagement specialist from ICO, African Youth and Community Organization. I'm here to talk about the last piece of the pilot project. Beyond the data, there's a community safety. It became clear through the pilot project that resourcing our community is a huge need. The PUA Coalition is addressing response and prevention in a variety of ways, including training, prevention, intervention, education, and community building. This work is just as critical as data tracking, because we don't just want to know what is happening, but also we want to do something about it. I'm going to share African Youth and Community Organization's experience with community building as a model for community safety. PUA project has increased trust between East African communities and institutions and mainstream community. Many of our constituents feared for their safety to encounter anti-Muslim and anti-immigrant sentiment or any violence motivated by intolerance. We are being targeted, our safety is at risk. Building our capacity to deal with hate has been a clear benefit for the population ICO works with. You will hear about how this is an issue for public safety from a Muslim woman during the testimony. The PUA project enabled us to establish a series of activity regarding hate and bias, including community engagement meeting, staff training, collaboration with other organizations. It also expanded our opportunity for youth. It gave us a chance to educate our community. That is the cultural capacity building, like community chai, dialogue, gathering, where the participant came together and shared idea openly without fear. This partnership will give us strength and help we need to fight against hate. It is engaging and ongoing activity that will bring a great result. I would like to conclude my speech sharing one of the community chai story. We had invited many of the mainstream community, which happened to be one of the EPUB grant committee board member. After listening our community story regarding hate and bias, she returned to the EPA board and convinced them to increase our grant request from 4,000 to 9,500. Thank you, all of you, for considering giving attention to this great work that PUA is doing, and I appreciate your commitment for building inclusive and livable neighborhoods and communities. I thank you all.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Honorable Mayor Wheeler and the City Commission, thank you. My name is Seemab Husseini, and I'm a community organizer with Unite Oregon. I'm here in that role and capacity. However, I'm also the co-founder and board member for the Council on American Islamic Relations Oregon chapter. It's not easy to point out one or a few things regarding the ripple effects of hate incidents over community without getting into the socioeconomics of a system that gave hate the permission it needed to get here. Before one even becomes a victim, it's almost common knowledge that these incidents are bound to happen at some point in their lives. Black parents have the talk, which non-black people of color are beginning to adopt. The effects of fractal systemic failures over an extended period of time for those described to be of a protected class has been long and fraught with challenges. The Council on American Islamic Relations recorded a 17% increase in anti-Muslim bias incidents nationwide in 2017 over 2016. This was accompanied by a 15% increase in hate crimes targeting American Muslims, including children, youth, and families, over the same period. Its reach is ever expanding in the 21st century, but our work continues, and our reach depends on you today. So today we focus on hate incidents and the impacts of hate crimes on our marginalized communities, the epidemic of it, and how it is rooted in our city and even state. One of our approaches at Unite Oregon is through leadership development. Our work with Portland United Against Hate in the building of this tool allows us to not only rely on a safe, community-trusted reporting and tracking tool, it also allows our diverse immigrant community to lead it. That's both uplifting and empowering. The need to create and maintain tools that will allow us to track potential hate crimes will be evolutionary in this city and a model outside of it. Portland United Against Hate has come together as a coalition of specific community-based organizations that understand the need and importance to track this epidemic and the vested interest and will to rid of it. The importance of taking feedback and experiences from communities and modeling them into useful community engagement is immeasurably beneficial to this city and the real solution to fix these problems. With little resources, the pilot project has laid this foundation and will have critical outcomes for many communities represented by Portland United Against Hate's 70-plus member coalition and this city as a whole. In memory of the one-year anniversary to the Max Train stabbings and murders, and the 30-year anniversary coming up of the death of Mulugeta Shira, let's get this done. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate
Thank you.
It. Thank you, all four of you.
All right. Our final panel is Asli Hassan, Jimmy Dogo, Diane Hess, and Meg Juarez. Jimmy, you're looking very sharp today.
It's good to see you all. Thank you.
Well, I'm going to start if nobody else is talking. All right. Again, Honorable Mayor Wheeler and also Honorable Commissioner, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Jimmy Dogo. I am the Director of Africa House and also Associate Director of IRCO, the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization. The Portland United Against Hate is a partnership between the community and the city of Portland. We all know that. And given what we did through our pilot project and also through the community, for us, the city is getting a lot more into this partnership, like wraparound services that are culturally responsible for people affected by hate incident. it was also an opportunity for city to have access to our various immigrant and refugee community who are living here within city of Portland. It was also an opportunity for the community and the city of Portland to find solution to problem that affecting our community. And especially at the Immigrant Refugee Community Organization, the community that we serve, coming from all over the world, from the Middle East, from Southeast Asia, from Africa, and from Eastern Europe, and most of those newly arrived refugees and immigrants are facing, you know, hate crime and hate incident, and they don't know where to look to. And that's why at IRCO, we, through this partnership, and again, thank you, we were able to put in place an advisory, which we call it a community, you know, action team that comprised of representatives from all those communities and include also two Portland Police Bureau officers, community liaison, Officer Natasha and Officer Adi, who are in this advisory. This gave an opportunity for our community to have a focal point to call when there is a hate crime or hate incident. For example, when they punish the Muslim Day on April 3rd, on April 2nd, all our Muslim students stopped going to school. On April 3rd, different school districts keep calling us. 90% of our students didn't show up from Muslim students from Somali, Middle East, Rohingyas. Nobody showed us. But all those families did not call a school, but call us at IRCO to let us know that because of those flyers and all those flyers that are going viral, they're not letting their children go to school because of this, you know, punish the Muslim Day. So those kind of advisory that are put in place for the community to call a place that they're comfortable to call and report those hate incidents. Again, thank you so much for the help. Thank you for this help to allow us to educate our community about resources that are available to respond to hate, and also to create a network to build community capacity to respond and reduce the impact of the bias incidents and crime. Again, this partnership allows us to strengthen our community network and capacity, reach out to different schools, neighborhood, faith group, affinity group, ethnic store, and ethnic restaurant to educate them about what is hate and hate crime and where to call in case there is an incident that they need to report. It helps us also, you know, conduct regular training on hate and hate incident to our community, and also provide a safe place for reporting and consultation, as well as, you know, meeting with law enforcement if need be that we need to contact, you know, or go for a legal procedure. So again, this opportunity and, you know, strengthen our capacity to educate our community, prevent and respond, and also support the victim and to tell them that they're not alone. The whole city of Portland are behind them to support them through this project. So thank you, and we will do more if we can expand this partnership, because there are still more things that need to be done if this project can continue or could be spent. Again, thank you for the support.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
My name is Asli Abdullahi Hassan. I greet all elected officials, community-based organization members, and community members. I would like to share with you some of the experience I have gone through under those from Somali community and others from refugee community. Those experiences I've personally gone through, my kids have gone through, and my neighbors have gone through this experience.
tareenka rashada iskuulada shaqada.
The biggest problems happens on the public transportation, in the schools and at workplaces.
Hadda tusaale shale cashar baan lahaa on meel iskuul aan galaaska ka qaadanayno oo private dhexdii library ama wadada socdaan nin gaari ugu soo ciriyay nafteeda aan u baqay waan iska cararay taa ka horna markii hore way ugu dhacday iyadana intaas lug baan ku tagay laashal waan aadi waayay waan baqay.
For example, like yesterday in the afternoon I was going to the library to learn ESL so that I can pass my immigration test. This gentleman who drove his car towards me and then almost hit me, and then that made me fear for my life and went back home. I missed that class yesterday.
Taa waxaa ku xigtay gabar yar oo 10 jir aniga dhalay xijaabka looga dhaqay iskuulka dhexdiisa. Markaan hadalnaa wax kuma noolaga ma hadlin waa wax baa laga qaban la saar ribna looga ma hadlin ayadana.
My young daughter who is about 10 years old was in school and her headscarf was removed by another student. We expressed our frustrations. Nothing was done. And that is very disappointing.
Tan kale laba gabdhood oo curyaane oo iyagana waxa soo qaaday macallimiintooda la socdaan nanka lagu wareejina stop taagan. Yaa naag u imaatay bulshada kale ma garacnaayday labadoodii bisay garacan waana qof mid iyo waa qof la caawiyo oo wax walba loo qabto waxba qabsan kan midna dhigahay laadahay.
There were also two female students who are people with disabilities. They were out with their teachers in the community, and as they were trying to cross the light, one was deaf, the other one was physical disability. So this person came behind them and started beating them, only the two who were dressed like Muslims. The problem is so huge, we cannot just sum up here.
Waxaan soo jeedinayaa waad mahadsantihiin mar walba in aad bulshada u wacdigelisiin noo imaatiin codadkeena aan dhiibano meelaan ka dacwoona aan helo waxaan wax u sheegana aan helo waxayna wax noologa qabto.
Thank you for the good work you are doing. We want more of these meetings to happen. We want to have an opportunity to express our views so that at least you hear what the problem is all about. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. My name is Diane Hessen. I'm the Education and Outreach Director at the Fair Housing Council of Oregon, and our organization has been fighting illegal housing discrimination since 1991. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, over a third of hateful acts occur in housing. Feeling safe and secure in our homes is, of course, fundamental. People who are feeling trapped by hateful acts where they live feel even more vulnerable amid a housing crisis where there are limited opportunities to move. Under the Federal Fair Housing Act, harassment, threats, intimidation, and coercion in housing are illegal. Our hotline provides assistance and advocacy to victims, and through our Portland United Against Hate partnerships, we are deepening relationships of trust with different cultural communities and increasing collaboration. We're working with our partners in conducting Know Your Rights trainings, targeting organizations, working with impacted communities. This has led to an increase in calls on related to hateful acts on our hotline and requests for more trainings and technical assistance. We are also training housing providers, landlords, homeowner associations, and homeless shelters on their legal responsibilities to prevent and address acts of hate that occur on their properties. In 2016, HUD issued a ruling requiring these housing providers to address these situations, and not doing so is a violation of federal law. One recent example of a situation we dealt with was in an apartment complex where there were racist terms that had been sprayed in the parking lot close to the unit of an African-American tenant. Initially, the manager did nothing, but after we contacted them and worked with them, they immediately cleaned up the language, sent a letter to all tenants explaining racial harassment would not be tolerated, and put up cameras throughout the parking lot. And we had been following up with the victim, and no, there have not been further problems. The impact we've had here is we've had requests from housing providers for more trainings and technical assistance on how to address and prevent hateful acts. We developed a sample policy on resident-on-resident harassment that many providers are utilizing. and we are getting requests from a range of different providers to feature our trainings at their annual conferences. So we are getting increased contact, increased activity in this area. So I'm confident we are starting to make an impact as part of PUA. We are very grateful to be a point of contact and a partner with Portland United Against Hate, and want to thank you all for your support.
Thank you.
Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Meg Juarez. I am the crime prevention coordinator for the crime prevention program at ONI. Our work in crime prevention focuses on providing public safety and education and awareness and supporting community partnerships to address public safety.